Chapter 46. Darrow. The sun is down. Severo's eerie laughter echoes down the halls of the Archimedes. No one else is laughing. When we arrived in Ilium after our month-and-a-half-long sail across the gulf, I expected to see a running battle between the Rim Armada and Far's outmatched fleet, one in which we were to exploit the chaos and slip through unnoticed. Instead, as we decelerate, we find a massacre. An inexplicable massacre. The Dragon and Dust Armadas, the dark flower of raw naval might, have been destroyed. Their remains float in orbit around the moons of Kaliki, a shroud of detritus and broken dominion dreams. Severo's laughter grates on Cassius and Oriu the worst. Lyria is just stunned by the sight of the battlefield. Few have seen anything like it, even me. "That's the Dustmaker," I murmur. The warship floats in the center of the debris field. It is as dim and cratered as an asteroid.
"Was," Severo corrects, and wipes his eyes with his sleeve. "Bologna, you have any champagne on this heap?"
I might join Severo in celebrating the misfortune of the Rim, if it were not so complete and so improbable. I cannot even begin to guess how Helios and Dido could have been so thoroughly annihilated. Is Far's fleet larger than Quick's telescope led me to believe? Or was his ambush, and it had to have been an ambush, just that thorough? Just that unexpected? My skin crawls with questions. Who is this Far? No obsidian I taught over 10 years of war was strategically and logistically sophisticated enough to have managed this against Helios and his battle-tested praetors of Io, Callisto, and Ganymede. Praetors who would have given me migraines. "How did this happen?" Cassius asks Ori. She has no idea. How would she? Cassius may be empathetic for the Rim, but I know he's just happy Lysander wasn't here. With the Lightbringer still crossing the gulf a few weeks behind us, he missed the ambush, and with the Rim's ability to help him in his war now broken, he'll go back to the core, and the conflict Cassius dreads will be pushed to another day. Cassius and Lyria hunch in the two pilot seats, staring out at the debris field. I stand behind them. Ori sits just behind the cockpit at the sensor and comm station as Severo paces the hall, enjoying the dark thrill of the enemy's catastrophe.
"Are you getting any active signals from Kaliki's cities?" I ask Ori.
"No," she says. "Radioscopes suggest this is 10 days old."
That matches with the energy flares we detected while we were crossing the gulf. Kaliki was in far orbit then. Hidden by the gas giant.
"Does that mean Athena's agents on the moon are gone?"
Lyria wonders aloud, but her voice trails away. Even she knows they are dead. Everyone here is dead. Finally, Severo stops laughing. He stares up from the hall at the back of Lyria's head like this is her fault. The cozy smell of coffee is all that remains of the optimism with which the rest of us started the day. It was to be the last leg of our journey across the gulf and signal our entry into Ilian space, where we were to meet with Athena's contacts at Kaliki City. With the city a crater, the contacts are dead or fled. With them has disappeared our link to Athena. My hair falls over my eyes as I hunch in thought.
"Can you take us in, Cassius? We need a better look at the wreckage," I say, "especially the Dustmaker." "Why?" Severo asks. "She in there? We're here to find Athena, not waste time looking a gift horse in the mouth." "We can do both," I say. "It's hardly off mission to seek context. We need to know what we're sailing into."
"Darrow, you heard what Quick said about the hull," Cassius says. "If we go into that debris field, we will take damage. Can't turn on the shields. That obsidian fleet that did this is still out there,
they'll see the shield energy signature.
You're right. Skirt the perimeter, then. No chances.
Cassius glides the Archimedes around the perimeter of the debris field, staying clear of the denser patches. Still, every minute or so, metal pings off the hull. I peer into the ship graveyard, wincing with every hit. After a decade of war, horror is as common to me as flies in a stable. Yet amidst the debris, I encounter a sight so inhumane that it puts lead in my guts. Severo sees it first and murmurs an obsidian curse. A great monstrosity floats in the center of the battlefield like a monument to a wicked celestial god. It drifts near the remains of the humbled dustmaker. Thousands of blue, grey and gold corpses, tethered together by wires into the shape of a giant obsidian crescent. From tip to tip, the crescent must be over 400 meters long.
Your men, your old braves did this, Cassius asks.
That must have been the Escomani, I say, without confidence. Disgust wells within me, and guilt and regret. Even as I led Ragnar's people to war, I knew brutal tendencies always lurked within our obsidian legions. Far has stirred the evil sediment up from the bottom of their hearts.
What he did to Serfi in Olympia, splaying her open in the Blood Eagle, was bad enough.
Even though he did this to my enemies, this further perversion puts him in a very special pantheon. Men who I wish to see die upon my blade. For several hours we skirt the debris field, searching in vain for signs of survivors who could tell the tale of what happened over Kalaki. We find none. Only the eerie sound of revenant loops, the voices of dead men on ships calling out into the darkness for aid or reporting Escomani breaches in their hulls.
"I've got something,"
Ori calls when we round Kalaki and reach the outer extremity of the debris field, where there is less radiation interference.
"There are not too many signals. Looks like the obsidians have screamer drones and have been targeting relays. But this one's coming from deeper within Ilium. It's not encoded."
She frowns.
"I think it's Athena. Let me see if I can isolate the signal."
"Lyria, go watch and see how Ori does this." Cassius nudges the smallest of our band. Lyria pops up and heads to the center station, ducking her head to avoid eye contact with Severo in the hall. The girl might have annoyed me by stowing away on our ship like Rona once did, but I'm impressed with how seriously she's learning the functions and equipment of the Archimedes. You only have to tell her something once. Cassius has taken to her. God knows there's been enough time clinking cups into the wee hours. I know she fills the vacuum Python Lysander left when they deserted Cassius, but I'm surprised how fond she is of him in return. Cassius O'Bologna is the last person I'd expect a red to like. A hologram flares to life once Ori and Lyria have isolated the signal. Athena's glowing red eyes stare out from a blizzard of static. Like before, her helmet is black and Corinthian in its design.
"This is Athena. The sun is down. I repeat, the sun is down. All sleepers and cells, report to your Omega torches for evac. The sun is down. The sun is..."
The transmission loses its battle to the high-energy jamming coming from deeper within Ilium and cuts out.
"What does that mean?" Lyria asks. "The sun is down. Fallback contingency,"
Ori answers. She sounds afraid.
"She summoned all the daughters to Helison."
"Helison?
Her base of operations."
"Their version of Tinos, then," I say back to Severo.
"And where is Helison?" he asks. "I don't know."
Severo does not accept that.
"We came a billion clicks and you don't know?"
"Which moon is it on? Callisto, Ganymede, Europa, one of the outer moons," I press.
"The Cryptae has been trying to kill Athena for a decade.
I was a deep cover agent in the Ra household. I'm the last person who should know. Could you imagine if I was ever interrogated?
She has a point, but Severo isn't pleased.
Then how are we supposed to contact Athena?
Kaleki has comms relay stations to contact her network. We all look at the bombed-out moon. Our only other option is to reach my Omega torch, a hardlink comms port.
Right. And where is your Omega torch? I ask.
She hesitates, apologetic. Sun Grave.
Cassius hangs his head. Severo starts laughing again, but his humor has fled.
I close my eyes and exhale forcefully through my nose. Why is nothing easy? Why can't I just go straight back to my love, my son?
Is that a bad thing? Lyria asks. Sungrave.
Cassius gives her a tolerant smile.
Oh, it's only the ancient heart of raw power, the axis of their military apparatus, an impenetrable citadel that even the Ash Lord couldn't take. Yes, it is probably the least convenient place to go. Is Athena an idiot? Severo asks. Ori? This is shoddy spycraft. Amateur hour.
It's not Ori's fault, Severo, Cassius says.
Course you'd say that.
Severo, the Ra Court operates out of Sungrave. Where else would my Omega Torch be located where I could reach it? Ori asks. I know this isn't what we expected to find, but we can still contact Athena. I have a way to bypass security. There are family passages we can use.
How are we even discussing this as an option? Darrow, this is not what we should...
When life springs forth, death follows behind, interrupts Ori, quoting from the book. When goodness is found, evil is close at hand.
The path straddles the boundary between these things, I reply.
Ori smiles. And just what the ever-loving hell does that mean? Severo barks. Are we really taking our marching orders from your ad hoc interpretations of some dusty-ass tome?
Your father's dusty-ass tome, I say.
And how'd that go for him? He asks, and looks at Cassius. Oh, right.
Cassius doesn't rise to the bait. I watch the debris out the viewport. If the Rim Armada can be destroyed, somehow I doubt Sungrave is as Ori left it. If it's the only way to contact Athena, then that is our road, I say.
Severo stares at me, incredulous.
Cassius, set course for Io, but go slow. Far's out there somewhere.
Silent, the Archimedes steers off Kaleki. I turn, expecting Severo to have slinked off after our tiff, but I'm surprised to see him still there, still staring at me as if I am unrecognizable. As much as I want to say something, to mend the chasm between us, I realize I cannot. I know Severo better than anyone, and there's nothing he'll hear right now. No sense or argument will sound good to him. So I shrug and turn back to the viewport, where Jupiter gazes back at me like a disembodied eye. The moon's held in its thrall, winking motes twirling in their orbits.
Ping.
A long moment.
Ping.
We all turn to look at Ori. What is that? I ask. She frowns.
A distress signal, she says.
Severo glares at her in suspicion.
I thought we should just keep looking in case someone was alive.
The place is crawling with distress signals, Cassius says. Doesn't mean anyone's alive.
This one is a heartbeat, she says.
And why didn't the Obsidians pick it up? Severo asks.
It's short range. Whoever sending it must have waited until after they left,
Ori says. I look at Severo. You know our old braves. Do you really want to go deeper into the system blind? He might be a pit of anger, but he doesn't want to die out here either.
Ori, pin the location. Cassius, if you say fly like an eagle, I am turning this ship around, he says.
and pushes the Archimedes into the debris field.
"Watch and learn, Lyria,"
he winks at her. A piece of debris hits the hull. We all wince.
"Starting now."
The escape pod is shaped like an egg. Instead of escaping the battle as its pilot no doubt intended, it found itself embedded into the side of a dead destroyer's hull. It is severely damaged. Severo and I spacewalk out to it in our new god-killer suits and cut open its hatch. Severo enters first.
"We got a breather,"
he says, as I push my way into the pod behind him.
"Barely."
The pod's power is almost gone, and its interior dark except for the glow of our headlamps. A single man floats covered head to toe in grey armour, his legs crossed in a seated position.
"Big bastard. Gold, no doubt."
Severo peers around the pod, collecting clues, and wiggles a tube sticking into a port in the back of the man's helmet.
"He's hooked directly into the shuttle's oxygen reserves, what's left of them. Probably brain dead by now. You saw the damage to the tanks outside. My guess, he tried comms, engine control, found they were slagged and saw his juice was running out, so he put this kit on to keep the cold out and went to sleep praying someone would find him."
I find a few more kits of armor in a concealed rack. One is missing.
"It's a bridge pod, looks like," I say. "Lots of gold-sized kits."
"That's good.
If he's not brain dead, he'll likely have a better idea of what happened than someone in the belly of a ship. Let's get him back to the Archie."
Severo and I haul the lone survivor back to the Archimedes, where we load him onto a medical gurney brought by Lyria and Ori. Ori is about to connect an oxygen recycler into his helmet when Severo swats her hand away.
"You stupid,"
he asks. I clarify. "Let's get him out of his armor before we feed an enemy knight O2.
Lyria, get the fusion cutter 8mm. You know where it is."
She's already off to the machine shop. We hear a clanging, a banging, and a string of curses. Then Lyria returns at a run. She tosses the fusion cutter to Severo, who gets to work on the armor. He's not precise in his cuts, and the gold's blood dribbles liberally onto the gurney. With every piece of armor Severo cuts off, my grip tightens further on the hilt of my razor because it becomes more and more apparent that whomever we've saved is no rear echelon pixie. His arms are brawny, his legs thick and muscled from high-gravity training. His chest is like a barrel and his shoulders as wide as my own. And then, after Severo cuts off his thermal body sleeve, there are the scars on the man's pale skin. Not so many as I have, but enough to make a grey leatherneck dip his head in respect. This is a frontline peerless. A killer.
"Manacles," I say.
Severo is far ahead of me. When the man is secured, Severo works on his helmet. It comes off with a pop and only a little spritz of blood. My own concentration on the tiny bristles embedded in the man's hands is so intense, I nearly miss Ori's intake of breath when Severo wipes the man's black gold hair away from his face. The man's armor may be nondescript, but his heritage is unmistakable. It is like looking at a brawnier, gloomier, manlier version of either Atlas or Romulus Aura. But unlike either of the famous brothers, this man is young and trends toward muscle.
"Is that who I think it is?"
I ask. Ori takes a moment before nodding. "Only if you think it's Diomedes Aura." Severo looks up at her and casually puts the fusion cutter into Diomedes' muscled neck. I swatted away, but Severo was watching for Ori's reaction.
"What are you doing?" I ask him. "He attacked Phobos," Severo says, still looking at Ori.
"I thought you didn't read the data packets."
"Only the relevant ones," he replies. "But I got all the data I need."
He tosses the fusion cutter to the side.
"Information, leverage, hostage exchange. Use your head, Darrow. Why would I cut his throat? Ori, aren't you going to give your old master oxygen?" Ori puts the mask to Diomedes' mouth. Severo raises his eyebrows at me.
Here's what. We start skinning the Ra's toes first, Severo says a few hours later. Diomedes has gained consciousness, and he's not talking yet.
Severo has one of his knives out and leans back in one of the lounge's sofas, his voice soft as if telling a children's story.
You always start with the digits.
I have made a paring knife that will do just fine.
There's lots of nerves in the toes. The most sensitive are under the cuticles. After we flay his toesies, we'll salt them. Then we'll bash them, right? One by one. Then I'll use tickler here and we'll work our way up.
He seems to relish the looks of horror on the faces of Cassius, Lyria, and Ori, but I know he's just winding them up, especially Ori, to test how loyal to her former master she still might be.
Bologna, you have any acid on board?
Cassius looks mortally offended.
I beg your pardon? Acid. Hydrochloric or ipsoric are best. Usually I prefer newt venom, but I didn't see any aquariums on board. Unless you're hiding them.
Are you? He asks Cassius. But watches Ori.
No. Pity. They hear Ra are tough. Might take Ipsoric.
The excitement on the Archimedes after discovering the identity of our new prisoner is palpable. Unfortunately, he is as silent as granite and just as unyielding. I questioned Diomedes about Kalaki. He stared back at me. Unspeaking, unblinking except when I mentioned the toxin still in his bloodstream. An unknown compound that seems to be responsible for the fits of cramping that occasionally rack the man. I'd think it a poison from an Askamani weapon, but the tiny hair-like thorns Ori extracted from his fingers and face would suggest otherwise. Severo was part right in his earlier diagnosis. Diomedes was paralyzed before he somehow got on the pod. Then he must have recovered to turn on his beacon and armor up. After that, he must have gone into some sort of meditative trance to reduce his oxygen intake, because he should be dead. What in the bloody damn worlds went on around Kalaki?
There will be no skinning, bashing, or salting on my ship, Cassius says.
He glances at Ori for support. Since Kalaki, she's drawn inward. Doubly so since Diomedes was brought on board. I'm hardly the only one who has noticed.
All the same, I'd prefer to have answers for Kalaki before we get to Io, I say.
I can get you answers, Severo says.
Oh, now you want them. Wouldn't risk debris, but will carve up an honorable man, Cassius says.
Honorable? Severo smirks.
You really did miss the war, boyo.
Cassius squares his shoulders.
I will not allow torture on my ship, Severo. Especially not torture of that man. He is the only reason I am alive. I owe him a debt.
You fancy yourself a part of the Republic now? Don't you? He points to me with a knife.
Arch Imperator.
He points to himself.
Imperator.
He points to Cassius.
Pilot.
He'll be conditioned against torture, Ori says. To break him would take time and instruments we don't have.
You'd know, Severo says. He's your master after all.
Sorry, was your master.
Strange, no, that he's the only survivor and you just happened to find his signal out there?
It was a guess, she says. The signal was not on the traditional spectrum. It was a family signal he used with his siblings.
No torture, Severo, I say. If Far did that to their war fleet, when we get to Io, I think Diomedes may be in a mood to tell us of his own accord. And we have Ori. She'll get the information we need. Won't she? I say.
Ori nods. With Far's fleet still at large, Ilium feels haunted as we glide deeper into the system. Once inhabited moons lie bombed out and quiet. The capabilities of our passive sensors are severely limited,
They can only receive input from the physical environment around the Archimedes. Vibrations of light, radiation, heat. The mass of Jupiter, its moons, and the radiation cascading off the planet make a grand, murky sea for hostiles to hide within. At our cautious pace, the Galilean moons are still days away. Io, Ganymede, and Callisto are hidden behind the gas giant. Europa flickers, a midnight blue mote in the eye of Jupiter, as she swings on her orbital path before disappearing behind Jupiter's mass. Haunted by the unanswered questions at Kalaki, I seek out Severo in the machine shop. With any vibration, a danger to us all, he listens to his music on headphones. He is working on his main suit of pulse armor. When I get him to finally tick off his headphones, he shakes his head at me. "Gods, could you be more jealous?" he says when I ask him what he thinks of Kalaki. "I'm not jealous," I say. "Jealous. You can't handle the fact that Far destroyed the Rim Armada, and you didn't, and don't understand how he did it. Like I said, jealous. Or colorist, like Bologna. Can't reckon an obsidian's your equal in space. If one was, it would be Ragnar's star," I say. He snorts. "So now you're thinking it is his star. Can I just talk it out without you shitting on my every word?" He shrugs, non-committal, and continues sculpting wolf embellishments into the armor. I lean against the metal smelter and watch him detail an incisor on the helmet. What doesn't make sense is even if Far guessed Helios and Dido were ghost sailing, and Kalaki was their ghost point, we should have seen more dispersion in the debris, and we should have seen more Volk and Askamani ships in the ruins. You don't inflict that kind of damage on Rim Praetors without taking a good licking yourself. You just don't. It was too lopsided. He should have lost half his fleet, at least, even in a perfect ambush. How is it so clean? How did they get so completely surprised? Why didn't they run? Their ships are faster. He finishes the incisor and sets the scalpel down. "Honor, dipshit. The Rim and Cassius have something in common. They're new to this war. They don't know what we know. Honor, if it ever existed, was the first casualty."